You're listening to Drake in the Morning
with Danny, Wes, and Sid
on 98.1 The Max.
Yeah, past couple of months, the music world has lost some legendary figures. David Bowie, Glenn Frey, Paul Kantner, Scott Weiland, on and on. So has the book world. The past couple of weeks, the passing of Harper Lee, the legendary author of To Kill a Mockingbird at 90 years old. Not a great surprise. And Pat Conroy, that was a bit of a surprise. Two of the South's most beloved writers. And I think it is important at times like these to acknowledge their work and their existence and what it has meant to many of us for a long, long time. Reed Coleman is a fine writer in his own right. He has two books out this year. The Jesse Stone series continues under his guiding hand. The Devil Wins came out this year. And a new character, Gus Murphy, in a very moving, intense book called Where It Hurts, both on newsstands, bookstores, near you, so buy them. And he and I have discussed that when book things came up, we could call him and just discuss that world. And he has been kind enough to be my pen pal for a few weeks. And now we just got to sit around and shoot the breeze about various things. Good morning to you, sir. How are you?
Good morning, Drake. How you doing?
Everything's lovely. How are things up in the east part of this fine country?
We have spring weather here. It's supposed to be 65 today and then the 70s for the rest of the week.
Pretty much the same here, which we will take after the long, dark winter months. Well, we discussed several things. You know, as a guy that grew up in Brooklyn on those streets and learned to write and loved reading and loved that entire world that many of us live in and truly enjoy, what is it like for a guy from Brooklyn to read Southern writing? Or do you even have that thought? Harper Lee and Mockingbird. Was that book a big part of your life as a child or as a young man?
Well, first of all, let me say, you know, I'm from the South, South Brooklyn.
Oh.
let me put it this way. I'm often asked from people here who say, you know, you set your books in Brooklyn or on Long Island, and we understand why we like them, but what do people in other parts of the country say?
Mm-hmm.
And I say that if you do your job well, as obviously Pat Conroy and Nell Harper did, it becomes universal.
Yes.
So I guess that's a roundabout way of saying, yes, they were set in places I was unfamiliar with, but when you do your job really well, as they both did, it's not a different place. It's a place that I feel a part of, and I think that's the magic of great writing.
That's exactly right. The geographic location is not really the point. It's what kind of work you do, because you are an East Coast writer, if you want to get down to that, but that never crosses my mind that these books are set in a certain geographic location. But A Mockingbird was such a defining book about the South in the 40s and the 50s and has endured for 65 years and shows no signs of ever slowing down. I wonder why it has endured and seems to reflect society as much now as it did back then in 1961 or that whole era. It just goes on and on and on and never gets tiresome to anybody.
Oh, I think the magic of that book, there's a lot of magical things about that book. Just start with the title.
Yeah.
Okay. The magic of the book is the narrator being a child. So you get an untarnished worldview. Right, it's very opposite of my writing, where you get a very world-weary view of things. But the fact is that when Scout is talking, you're getting a kind of child-eyes view of the world.
Mm-hmm.
And so I think one of the things that endures about the book is there's the no BS factor?
Innocence.
In her narration.
Yeah. Yeah, it's just, it is the world of it is the world through her eyes as she watches her father and this horrible racial situation down there, and it continues. But I mean, this book has I can't think of many books like this that have lasted and endured and keep selling year after year after year.
Well, there's the Bible and the Great Gatsby.
Yeah. And dictionaries, but beyond that, she had a good run of about 90 years, and then you go on over to Pat Conroy, who I think, get the idea that you write from any kind of anger or dysfunction in your soul, but Pat Conroy, by his own admission, had a hellish life, and that's where he wrote from over and over again, from the Prince of Tides to beach music. The Great Santini was about the ugliness of his childhood, and he drew on that endlessly, but wrote about it in this lyrical way that was just heart-stopping. And I don't know why he never seemed to write that out of his soul. Do you know why?
I don't think he wanted to.
Yeah.
I think writers draw on what they draw on, and in some ways, you don't ever want to lose that. And so I don't think the exorcism was ever complete.
Yeah.
And unlike Harper Lee, I actually knew Pat Conroy.
Exactly, yeah.
Very little bit. I don't want to make it out that we were buds and pals, but I tell you, he was one of the funniest people I'd ever met.
Hmm.
He was, as we say in Brooklyn, he was a real character.
Yeah, and the books reflect that. And you told us a story about him when you were on last month. Y'all were in Alabama or something, I think. Share that story again, if you recall what I'm talking about.
I'm not sure which story it was. Because
there was a sign on something.
So how Pat and I sort of got introduced is we were at the Alabama Book Festival. And the same person was going to drive us back to the hotel. And from the parking lot, there was a machine shop. You could see a machine shop that was called Harper Lee Machinery. And I turned to Pat and I said, "To Drill a Mockingbird." And he said, "That's the funniest pun I have ever heard in my life." And then we went to dinner together and sat around and told stories to each other.
Mm-mm-mm.
And and then he offered to read Where It Hurts and to give the book a blurb.
Oh man.
That's amazing to me.
That is very, very strong. What a great endorsement from him. And I you had the idea at that time that he was his health was getting better and that he was trying to take better care of himself, but I guess once the pancreas goes, there's not much you can do about that.
Yeah, it's it was very sad because you could tell that I didn't know whether he was sick or not, whether he knew he was sick or not, but you could tell that he was trying to take better care of himself.
He was on this show, as I mentioned to you before, about 5 years ago when My Reading Life came out, which is just an incredible look inside his heart and his brain. And on the phone, even at that time, he sounded, I don't want to say feeble, but he was not the outgoing, gregarious kind of guy that, let's say, Bob Parker was. And I had envisioned him as being that kind of a guy. But he didn't seem, I don't want to say timid, but he was just, he sounded very fragile. Is that accurate, you think, or not?
I would say that he was a lovely gentleman, but, I only knew him for a year, and I would say that your assessment was spot on. He didn't speak, as forcefully or as gregariously as somebody who wrote like him would expect.
Exactly.
But that's, what's funny is I only also knew Bob Parker very little, and he was an outgoing, funny guy, but a lot of authors do their talking in their writing and aren't what you expect them to be.
Yeah, well, Conroy will certainly be missed. And I wonder how much of a novel he had done. Do you have any idea?
He told me he was working on one, and that in his statement before, you know, from February, said that he was determined to finish it before he passed. But, you know, I'm not at all sure how far he was along in it. I hope that it was finished, because I would hate to see something happen to him the same way that it happened to Harper Lee.
Reed Coleman is our guest. He is up in New York today. He is the writer of 20-odd novels, the Mo Prager series, a new series about a guy named Gus Murphy, which is a very heartfelt, interesting, inspiring novel called Where It Hurts, and the ongoing Jesse Stone series that Mr. Parker began years ago. If I want you to tell the story that you told me about your discourse with a lady on Facebook over Where It Hurts. I thought this, that in the year 2016, it was a little bit surprising to me that somebody who reads adult work like this was offended by some of the language in the book. But you had the gumption and the kindness to explain it to her, and she got it. And then you understood maybe why she was upset by it in the end.
Yeah. You know what? One of the things that the internet allows is closer contact between a reader and the writers they admire or they want to write to. I mean, when in the beginning of my career, I used to get an occasional letter in the mail, but these days, you know, you can get in touch with an author through his or her website.
Yeah.
So I got, and this was last week, I got an email from a woman who said basically that she really liked the book but was very upset by my usage of the F word. And, you know, I could have gotten all haughty about it and, you know, not written back to her at all, or written back, you know, something to the effect as, don't write my books for me.
Yeah.
There was something about her saying she wanted to stick with the book, in spite of her not liking the language, that I just intuited that there was more going on.
Mm-hmm.
I wrote back to her and I explained to her that if I'm going to write books about New York area cops, that I have to use the language that they use. And that one of the reasons she liked the story was because she bought the characters, and one of the reasons she probably bought the characters was because they used the language you would expect them to use.
Mm-hmm.
So that I wouldn't apologize for it, but that I understood that some people had sensitivity to certain words. So that's the last I expected to hear from her. Then she wrote back to me and said basically that the truth was that her son, much like the protagonist's son in the book, had died well before his time, unexpectedly.
Mm-mm-mm.
And that's why she was reading the book.
And that
she was getting something out of the book that she really needed to get out of the book.
Some kind of relief for herself that it hasn't happened to just her. It happens to other folks all the time, just happens to be in your book.
Yeah, I was quite stunned by it, and it was a good lesson for me, and a good lesson, I think, for people. It's easy in this day and age to get angry and overreact, and, you know, I acted like an adult and explained myself.
The ongoing challenge for all of us to act like an adult. That never ends. The outrage is getting a little bit much, though. Our guest is Reed Coleman. You know, this question often pops into my mind with guys like you. Where do you draw the line between what is popular fiction and what is literature anymore?
I've never cared for that line, frankly.
Which line? Popular fiction?
The line that says this is literary.
Right, right.
This is genre fiction.
Right.
This might sound kind of egotistical on my part, but I dare anybody to read one of my books and tell me it isn't entertaining, or that it isn't literary, or
yes,
that it wouldn't stand up to the same sort of inspection that quote-unquote literary fiction.
Right.
There's junky writing in all forms, and there's great writing in all forms. And I don't think you should make those distinctions.
So don't genre-alize anything. Just take it for what it is and don't overthink it.
Yeah, and I think genre fiction, those of us who write genre fiction, have an extra burden. We have to entertain the readers. You can discuss whatever you want. As you know, obviously, in Where It Hurts, I'm discussing a very weighty issue.
Mm-hmm.
I also have to entertain the reader. Sometimes people, I suspect, who write literary fiction, or as we in the mystery business call it, books without plots, don't have the compulsion, don't feel the compulsion or need to entertain the reader. And, right. I think my job is actually harder.
Well, you do a fine job with it, and this a new book, Where It Hurts, is worth everyone's time, as is the ongoing Jesse Stone books. So you and our buddy Ace Atkins, who writes the Spencer novels that Mr. Parker began in 1972 or three, and Robert Knott, who has carried on the Everett and Virgil books, are meeting up for a Parker convention this week. Tell us about that.
We're going to the Tucson Festival of Books, and we were invited to do basically a Three Faces of Parker panel, which I imagine will be heavily attended. They're actually paying our expenses to come out and do this panel, for which the three of us are very much looking forward to, because you realize it takes three grown men to do what Bob Parker did by himself.
Exactly right. I had that same thought last night. He was truly one of a kind. And I suppose that you guys can keep doing this as long as the family and the estate want you to, and as long as the books keep selling, right? I mean, on and on into infinity.
Well, I mean, I've been very fortunate in that the first two books that I've done, the Robert B. Parker's Blind Spot, right, and Robert B. Parker's The Devil Wins, have both made the New York Times bestseller list. So, in the end, it is a business. So as long as the books keep doing well and as long as the estate is happy with what we do, you're right. We can do this in perpetuity.
So his sons call the shots now that Joan has gone to?
Well, yes, he has two sons. They're the estate. They had an agent named Helen Brand who...
Yes.
Sadly passed away a few months ago.
I did not know that.
But she had made plans. She knew she was ill and had made, contingencies for her passing. And so, yes, now it's pretty much
Daniel and David.
They have two agent, but it's also the sons are the people who make the decisions.
Well, you do great work, and I'm happy that you're a correspondent for all things bookish, and we'll discuss these things as the need arises, and I'm sure that it will. Tomorrow, a friend of yours, C.J. Box, is on. Have you read his new book yet?
Chuck, I have not read Chuck's book yet, but he's going to be at the Tucson Festival of Books as well. So I'm going to see him later this week.
This guy is at the top of his game too. Off the Grid is the book, and it is remarkable. He gets better with everything he does. So give him our best. Tell Ace he owes me money. and good talking to you as always. Let's stay in touch. And thanks again, man.
Yeah, no problem. Thank you very much for having me on. And let's do it for a happier occasion.
You got it, man. Thank you, Reed Coleman.
Take care.
That is our friend Reed Coleman from the, he writes very, very well. You can find him at reedcoleman.com. He writes the Jesse Stone books that Robert Parker wrote for years and that Tom Selleck played on the television versions of those books. And Reed has taken the character and made it even a much broader kind of a character with more things going on. And Gus Murphy is also quite the interesting dude, which Wes and I both learned by reading Where It Hurts, which is out in bookstores. If there are any bookstores left, there are a few. So support bookstores by all means, and support reading, and Read to your children and let them read to you, and it'll make your life a lot happier and more complete. So good luck, and I thank him for the time today.
You know, he said that it took three grown men to do the work of one Robert B. Parker.
That's a great observation.
Yeah. They're also doing their own thing, though. So
Yeah, most definitely. And they are all really good at their work, too. That new book is called Blackjack, and it came out, I believe, last week. And we had him on the air once. But he lives in Los Angeles, and I think we got him up at 5:30 in the morning. And to say he was not the best interview we've ever had, he was a little grumpy and didn't know who we were and didn't really care, but wanted to sell some books. But I'm sure it was 5:30 in the morning, for God's sake, and you know, who the hell were we? But anyway, if you like cowboy books, it's great. It's out there on the bookstands now, too, bookstores, online. Just get it and support it. And support Miss Rook, Rook Insurance. Elizabeth Rook, we met with her a few weeks back, and she is now a sponsor of this program. And we thank her. She is an independent insurance agent who locks in your rates indefinitely. No surprise rate hikes, no statewide rate. It just stays as it is on the first day you get it.
That's right. And nothing scarier than to think of a 16-year-old driving. Never add a younger driver without checking with Elizabeth Rook.
No. She will give you some good rates, and she even deals in earthquake insurance. Many companies have dropped that, but she has not. So car, home, life, just all these things. She will save you money on your monthly payments, and she'll lock in these rates, and they will not change. So we would suggest that you call her or go to the website, rookinsurance.com. There are phone numbers in two offices.
867-SAVE. That's 867-7283.
Thank you, Miss Rook. Rookinsurance.com. You can check her out on Facebook as well and learn more about what she does. A little break, and we'll come back with the entertainment news of the day, what there is of that, and other stories that aren't the real news in a moment.
Email us anytime at mail@drakeinthemorning.com.